Welcome to the Rent to Rent Success Podcast, the only podcast entirely dedicated to helping you achieve rent to rent success. We talk about the ethical way to get you started in property without buying it. This is our place to inspire each other to believe bigger, to be bolder, and to be game changers for good. Property investors and sisters Stephanie and Nikki Taylor are your guides on this exciting ride. Let's start up the engines and get ready to fly. Hello, 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 and welcome to this special episode of the Rent to Rent Success Podcast. I'm so excited to be joined today by Louisa Trunks. Louisa is a total star, and you'll see why I could not wait to have her on the podcast today. We are doing a book together that's been written by Kylie Anderson, which is called Iconic Wealth for Women. And Louisa is the founder of a property management company in Cornwall. She buys, rents, and manages a 300 plus bed portfolio of residential and service accommodation. Louisa actually got started in rent to rent, so it'd be great to hear how she got started in rent to rent and grew such a big business. Louisa also helps value-led investors to maximize their profits in their current portfolio or to build new streams of income. And what I was particularly interested in is Louisa uses some of her portfolio, a large part of her portfolio actually, for emergency accommodation for families at risk of homelessness. And that can be a great thing to go into, a win-win for society and for us as business owners. Now, what Louisa has done for the last 25 years is she's been a fundraising consultant. That means this woman is an expert in attracting investment, in attracting funding, and she loves to do that for social impact, to attract more money into social impact via philanthropy and not-for-profit. So we'll be talking about that. And Louisa is a cancer survivor, and we talked about this before we started rolling, that it gives you such a different perspective on balancing work and well-being and living life to the max. So welcome to the show, Louisa Trunks.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
So Louisa, let's start off with your background in property. How long have you been in property? What led you there? And then we'll go into how you got started with rent to rent.
Yeah, of course. So as you pointed out in that lovely introduction, thank you. I've always worked in and around the third sector, so with charities and not-for-profits as a fundraiser. And I was working as a consultant for myself, and my husband started to work for himself as well. And we realised that we were quite vulnerable in terms of pensions. So we thought we would just get into property a little bit, you know, get two or three properties and just sort of get some secure passive income. And so I went on a course, a 3-day course, thinking that I didn't really know a lot about property. And actually the two things happened on that course. One was the huge realization that a large part of what property is actually all the things I know and have been consulting on around sort of strategy and business planning and delivery and fundraising. And then the second thing that happened is that I met my now business partner called Leanne Ingham, an incredible woman who is an ex-Royal Navy officer, and she has over 20 years experience in property investment. So she had the property knowledge, and I had the sort of business and strategy and fundraising knowledge, and we came together. We founded our company 5 years ago, very quickly, after about 6 weeks of meeting each other, which is quite high risk. That's not necessarily me normally, but it worked very well. And we started off with some rent to rent. So Leanne and Mike own portfolio of 20 plus owned properties. And the idea was that the company we formed, Greenway, would manage their portfolio and then would create its own portfolio as well. So very quickly, we needed cash flow because we needed resource because we had a reasonable size portfolio to manage. And so to do that, we took on in the first 4 months, I think it was, we took on three rent-to-rent properties that were four-bedroomed houses, maybe four or five-bedroom houses, a mix, and converted them into HMOs. Yeah.
Fabulous. So tell us about that, because so many people are at the start and they want to get started and they want to have that leverage and that cash flow without having to buy the properties. So how did you do it?
Well, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about it, creating content, I guess you'd call it, you know, leaflets to explain the rent-to-rent model. And we spoke to estate agents and just sort of pushed it out there and had as many conversations as possible. I think in the end, the opportunities came more from where we weren't expecting them. One or two came from agents, but actually some came from contacts. As soon as we started talking about it, we found that we knew people that had houses. And since then, we've now got over 10. And that's come a lot more from people that Leanne and Mike knew. I should probably point out that whilst my company and Leanne and Mike are in Cornwall, I'm in Gloucestershire. So otherwise, sometimes things don't make sense when you hear me talking about, not being around. So they had their children at private school in Cornwall. And so they've got a huge network. And it was sort of starting to speak to people that we found. Yeah, we found some properties. And actually, they all came too quickly. We only wanted one. And by the time two came along a few weeks later, we were like, oh, we're a bit busy now. You know, can we hold off a bit? And then three walked through the door, and it was a no brainer. You know, we couldn't say no because it was such a perfect property, and it did us brilliant things. We spent the profits, as it were, that came from those three properties on an administrator, which freed us up immediately, and meant that we could operate those houses to the high standard that we want to. You know, quality is exceptionally important to us.
Oh, I love it. You've given so much gold in that short time because you got it. You told everyone. You talked to agents. And this is something that often happens. The leads come sometimes where you're not expecting them from.
Yes,
and especially within your own network. And then you were able to use the money, or some of the money, from those three properties to take on an administrator, because one of the things that we all want is not just money freedom, but we want the money freedom for the time freedom.
Yeah.
And so being able to employ staff, especially nowadays, you can employ virtual assistants. We had a virtual assistant for our first few properties that we were paying on an hourly basis for the time worked. So it was so affordable to be able to do it that way.
And I absolutely love the rent-to-rent model, and we're really passionate about HMOs. We love both of those things, but HMOs particularly they're quite complex. You know, the reason that you get higher returns is because they are more complex than single lets, and therefore you can't really enter into it lightly. You know, I mean, I'm a go-getting kind of person. You know, let's just go and do this, but you do need to think through and understand what you're getting yourself into, and that will take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Our first employee was a UK-based one, but we now have a sort of split team. So I have three, maybe four Filipino-based VAs who are absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I have a team of six. We're in the middle of recruiting, which is why I don't know the numbers. Six, seven UK-based staff to support what we do, along with a huge team of subcontracted cleaning staff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. But now your portfolio is much, much bigger than those early days.
We didn't need that.
Over 300 properties. And
300 beds. Yeah, not 300 beds.
Yes, that's a good distinction, but still a lot to manage.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about how your current portfolio stands and the mix of the different types of property that you have.
Yeah, so as you said, we've got over 300 beds, and that is a mix of residential, and majoritively the residential is HMOs, but we have some single lets as well. And then the other part of the portfolio is serviced accommodation. Some of that is holiday facing. We are in Cornwall. A lot more of it is for corporates, or as you mentioned in my intro, a large percent of that is for emergency accommodation with Cornwall Council.
Yeah, so that's something that I know will be of interest to people, because it's very guaranteed. Is that emergency housing something that you can do with properties that you manage on a rent-to-rent basis, or is it only for properties that you own?
So we now work directly with the council. We did work with a brilliant intermediary for a while, a good while. but we now work directly, and so our portfolio is a mix of rent to rent, owned and managed. We manage for other people as well. And we've got all of those three types with the council on contract. And because it's with the council, obviously there's a lot of hoops to go through. And I've spent a long time making sure that our safeguarding procedures are right, our risk assessments and our health and safety procedures. And obviously our houses have to be up to a certain standard, but you would expect that as a responsible landlord anyway. So there's nothing hard there. It's just making sure everything's in order. And then if it's a rent to rent agreement or it's a managed agreement, then making sure that that contract, it stands up to the scrutiny of the council has been a task, but certainly not impossible. No, it's done. Mm. Yeah.
And do the councils provide the contracts to you, or do you provide the contract to the council?
No, we provide them. So obviously they provide we have a contract with the council. We are commissioned, but we have to show contracts back to the ownership document for the property, because they have to legally make sure that it's all clear, you know, right back. So we have to show the land registry ownership document and then the contracts that take us up to us. So for example, we have one that's it's owned by somebody, rented to us, and actually then it's another of our companies that is contracted to the council. So we have to have two guaranteed rental agreements to bridge both of those relationships back to the ownership document, if that makes sense.
So it does. So where I get it is, I understand the contract that you have with the owner of the property that shows mm-hmm. that you have that ability to be able to rent out that property or, you know, sublet that property, however it's worded. And then when you go to the council then to contract with them to provide emergency housing, what my question is I would expect that the council would write that contract to they what do. They want.
Yeah. Yes. They do. Yeah. And I think it's 100 and, do you know, I stopped reading at about 135 I think, pages. It's very substantial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's what you would expect. Yeah. So that's good to know that. And I suppose it varies with different councils, whether they're willing to work with people who are not the owners of the property, i.e. on a rent-to-rent basis, which your council is. And most councils are so much struggling for emergency housing. I think it's a great marketplace for those who can meet all the requirements to be able to get into it.
The biggest requirement, I feel, I mean, there's the health and safety requirement, but you'd hope we were all hitting all of that anyway. The safeguarding is the kind of new area of work, because you are housing vulnerable people. You have to have a safeguarding policy. And sometimes that trips into you may have children in your property. And so you have to be aware of you know, any red flags and that your process for reporting them. So that's a bit of a new area, but it's all doing learnable.
Yeah. Well, that's so interesting. And I'm sure that people will be asking, oh, do you do teaching on emergency housing? We haven't discussed this, but I think people would be very keen to learn more about this. So is that something you're doing or thinking of doing?
I haven't actually thought about doing that yet. No, we're too busy doing it. But I'm sure I'm always happy to share what I know and help other people. Okay. Especially with something like this, because it's like you said, that the need for emergency housing is off the scale. Before COVID in Cornwall, it was about 200, 300 units. So unit could be a single person or a family, required emergency accommodation. And it's gone up to over 800 now, because landlords are selling up. We get a lot of people whose landlords are choosing to sell. Mm-hmm. And that may be fine for the landlord, but obviously that often puts a family at risk. Mm-hmm. And the council they have to put them somewhere. We get a lot of people who are escaping domestic violence and rates of that are going up as well with all the pressures that we're all facing. So it's a horrible place to be. And if we can put our properties to good use, and our properties are lovely, they're a really good standard, because they've nearly all gone out on the serviced accommodation market. Mm-hmm. And we get wonderful calls from people that come in and, you know, we had one woman who spent all night crying. She had a 2-year-old. She'd spent all the night before she came to us crying because of what she was facing, and that she thought she was going to go into some kind of hostel and have to like hide with her two-year-old in the corner from people who were struggling with drug addiction, etc. And then she spent the whole of the first night in our property crying because she couldn't believe that she was in a warm, beautiful, safe apartment that, you know, where her son was going to be okay and she was going to be able to sleep. And it was just like, yeah, we like doing that. That makes us all very happy. That lovely, warm, fuzzy feeling.
Aww.
And you're helping.
Is the emergency housing HMOs?
No, we don't do that. It's something we might explore with them in the future because I think they do offer that, obviously only to single people.
Yes.
But at the moment, we only they have three sort of areas. One is families, one is couples, and one is single people. And we don't do single people.
Yes.
And therefore, we can't use HMOs because of the safeguarding.
Yes. Okay. Well, why do you choose not to do adults?
We do adults, sorry. We just don't do single adults at the moment because the rates are obviously lower, as you'd expect. Unless we put them in an HMO model, it doesn't work. Our HMOs are full of professionals who are also desperately in need of homes, so we don't really want to kick them out to homes the other people. It would be counterproductive.
I see. Yeah, got it. It's so interesting because our council as well were looking for emergency housing, but they didn't want HMOs. That's why I was asking that question. They wanted single lets, and it will be for that reason that you were saying there, families and couples.
Yes.
But even for their single people, they're looking for not HMOs was my understanding at the time. But an area that I would love to explore, and I'm sure that people may want to book a consultation, which I know are super valuable and super reasonable. So you can get in touch with Louisa. And Louisa, let's come on to your website, because Louisa has an amazing website, greenwayproperty.co.uk. Now, if you are listening to the podcast or if you're in Kickstarter, you probably know that I love simplicity with websites and with business models. But Louisa does a lot of things: corporate accommodation, holiday accommodation, residential accommodation. She offers investment opportunities, and that's all on her website. Yet it's so simple, and the services are very clear. The value-based idea of it, i.e. the green way, is all explained. And all the opportunities that previous investors that you've worked on, your own company or with investors, are all there detailed on the website. So it's packed with value. So I really encourage you to go and visit that website, greenwayproperty.co.uk. I'm sure you'll be inspired and get lots of ideas. And if you are an investor, you'll see that there are lots of opportunities there.
Oh, that's very kind of you. We've taken a long time trying to get our website right. And yeah, that's great to hear. Thank you.
It's very personal as well. I love the Our People a bit of it and how personal it is.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're about. You know, we are a family business. We're two families that you know, with four directors, two families. And every single one of our staff is also part of a family and part of our family. You know, that's how we are. That's who we are. And we're very discerning on who we work with because of that. You know, we only work with people who meet our values. Life is short. We don't want to spend time working with people who don't fit with us. So
yeah,
you know, we lay it out there so you can see who we are and what we're about. And if that's not for you, then awesome. You can go and find someone that is.
Yeah, exactly. I really resonated with it. One of the things I know people will be super interested in is your expertise for over 20 years is fundraising.
Yes.
And fundraising for not-for-profits. So companies, organizations trying to do good in the world and raising the funds to be able to do that effectively. Now, how this has crossover to us in business is that in property, we're also fundraising. We're also trying to attract investment. And I want you to talk about that, Louisa, but I also want to tell people that the things that Louisa is going to talk about today are like gold dust for your business. And she has a website at etphilanthropy.co.uk. We'll put the link under this. And on that website, you can get a document which is all about how to supercharge your fundraising, which I know will have applicability to your business. Or you may be also running a not-for-profit, in which case it's also perfectly for you. So, Louisa, talk to us about what should people be doing who want to raise funds?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think, so as you said, fundraising bridges both, really. And whilst the large amount of my experience is in raising funds for good causes, actually raising funds is raising funds. So there's a lot of similarities in the way that you would do that for investment to your profit-making property company, and you might, as you might do for a not-for-profit. And for me, it is, because I'm a fundraiser, I find it really easy to talk and ask for money. I have absolutely no problem with that bit. I know some people do, and I provide coaching on that. But actually, let's park that, because that's the easy bit. For me, raising funds is all about delivery. You shouldn't be asking for funds if you can't deliver. And that's what I'm always working with all of my clients on, is how do you make sure that you are very clear on what you want to do, your why, very clear on what you want the money for, how you're going to use that money. And in property, that would be your budgets and making sure that everything there is totally nailed down and that you've got all your contingency plans in place. And for a not-for-profit, that's just understanding your projects and same, having contingency and how that, the impact that that's going to have. And then it's being able to communicate that, and then it's being able to manage that money and deliver it. I think far too many people, when they fundraise in any capacity, they think that the moment they've asked, they've got the yes and the money's in, that it stops. That's when the large part of fundraising happens, because you have to deliver and report back to your funders. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it bridges, really, I think.
Yeah. So if people want to position themselves, say if they've got themselves into a situation where they know they can deliver a result for people.
Yeah.
Perhaps they've done a deal on their own or with family and friends, and now they're looking to branch out and attract investment from outside of their, perhaps their current immediate circle.
Yeah.
Go on.
I think I was going to answer probably, hopefully, the question you were about to ask, which is, what would I recommend they do? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I got excited.
And jumped in. I think it's about, for me, it's about knowing who you are and communicating that. So, you know, it's great that you've picked up on that from our website, because that is who we are. What you want, a funder is a partner, aren't they? They're always a partner. So you want to make sure that they are the right fit for you, and vice versa. And the only way you do that is by having a really clear and coherent idea of who you are and communicating that. Not only does that mean that you attract the right partners, it also means that you build credibility through your transparency. Because if you're not being, I wouldn't work with anybody that wasn't transparent. And I think sometimes it's really easy to get caught up in trying to say the things you think your funder wants to hear. And you're not really doing it to mislead them. You're just doing it to try and attract people. But actually, I think it's counterproductive, because I don't think it breeds credibility. So I think it's about really knowing who you are, what you want, and what you want to do, and communicating that honestly and earnestly. And then, I think you will attract the right people.
That sounds so straightforward, so simple, that it doesn't feel true. But I know it is true.
Yeah,
I know people often look for something, but that's more. But when I look for people or things to invest in, I want to see who people are, because it's really the people as well as the investment itself. Yeah. But it's the people, because you want to enjoy your time investing with them.
So
and
right,
they want to enjoy their time investing with you. And that at the end of it, it both comes out as a win-win. And you can't enjoy that process. When you've got excess, you're in a position where you've got excess funds that you want to invest. Part of what you want to get out of it is, as well as money, is pleasure.
Satisfaction.
You've created something together that you can be proud of.
Yeah, you absolutely do. And, you know, and it's really important to us in our company that we bring joy and fun to everything we do. So we often have business meetings on beaches, and we often, you know, we do a lot over food, because we really like food, and that's brilliant. But if we attracted an investor that's going to frustrate, because actually they want all their meetings in a quiet environment that's more business focused, then we're not the right fit. And, you know, and that we're all just going to get a bit annoyed, aren't we? So, I think it's really important.
Yeah. And before we close, I know that one of the things that you're very focused, get a lot of things done. You've got a family.
I do, yes.
You've got, you've got your property business, you've got your fundraising business, yes. And also I know that you're a cancer survivor.
I am indeed. I'm 3 years clear this year, and yeah, I am. I had stage three breast cancer I was diagnosed in 2019. I became no evidence of disease in 2020, just before COVID. So yeah, that was an interesting part of our property, because my property company was about just over a year old when I was diagnosed. It normally is, but it was a big shock diagnosis. And my lovely poor business partners had to prop us up. You know, we had to rely on the systems that we put in place and to get through a commercial conversion that we were in the middle of, as well as managing our company. And my husband was obviously, whilst he's a director, he was a bit busy looking after me and our children. And we had to get through, but we did.
So. Yeah, and that shows the importance of working with the right people as well.
It really, you learn all kinds of things that seem a bit trite when you talk about them after facing serious illness. But, you know, you really do sort of come to value everything and think about every moment of if you realise how short and precious life is. And if you've only got so many moments, you want to spend those moments in the way that you want to spend them, with the people you want to spend them with. So every element of my life now is all about weaving pleasure and joy in. And most of the time, manage to do that most of the time. Yeah.
Well, that's so good. Now, I want people to get the most out of you, and know that people will want to contact you. So I think the top way is you can go to greenwayproperty.co.uk and be inspired by all that Louisa has there. But if people want to get these tips for fundraising, then they can go to etphilanthropy.co.uk and get the free guide and also book a consultancy call with you. But Louisa, tell us what else, or anything else that you would like people to do as a next step if they want to work with you further.
I'm really active on Facebook and LinkedIn, so that's often a really good way to come and find me as well. I love to have chats. Obviously, my time is somewhat limited, like with all of us. I can't have as many conversations as I'd like, but certainly come and connect with me. I think that's a really good place to start. If you're down in Cornwall, then definitely let me know. And if, you know, as I said, I'm up in Gloucestershire. If you come near Cheltenham, I'd love it. I always love a coffee. Yeah. But if you're coming down to Cornwall, then let us know. We can always arrange. If the guests and tenants are abiding, we can arrange you to come and see some of our properties and talk to you more about how we do things. So.
Yeah, I know. Oh, that's a fantastic invitation. Yeah. I love Cornwall. Everybody loves Cornwall, don't they? Loves
Cornwall. It's a really good excuse. I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to go to work this week. I've got to go away to Cornwall. And yeah, my family now just roll their eyes at me like, yeah, Mum, we know you're going to work really hard. Yeah. And then the pictures of me on the beach sea swimming all come back and I'm like, bastard.
Well, it's been so good talking to you, Louisa.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Are there any last words that you would like to say to our audience as we close?
No, I think not. I think the lasting thing around fundraising is the two most important tips from me are all about credibility, transparency and respect. And you have to be able to deliver. That's my two biggest tips for fundraising in property.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. And what I loved about Louisa's story is starting off in rent to rent to get that cash flow going. And that's something that we love too. And that's seedling, and Louisa's still running her rent to rent company, has spurred this big 300 plus unit portfolio of properties owned, managed and on a rent-to-rent basis. If you want to find out more about taking your first steps in rent-to-rent, we have got the rent-to-rent success masterclass and guide at renttorentsuccess.com/guide, G-U-I-D-E. And also you can contact Louisa on, we'll have all the links in the show notes, on LinkedIn, on Facebook and at her property company, greenwayproperty.co.uk. And if you want the tips on fundraising at etphilanthropy.co.uk. So thank you, Louisa, for joining me today.
Lovely to see you.
And thank you also for watching and for listening. That's it for this week. Until next week, believe bigger, be bolder, be a game changer. See you soon, guys. Bye for now. Thank you so much for being with me here today. If you would like more, we've written the number one best-selling book on rent to rent. You can find it at renttorentsuccess.com/book. Reviewers on Amazon have described it as the best rent-to-rent HMO book and also as a definitive reference guide and inspirational. Take your next step today and buy the book. You can find it at renttorentsuccess.com/book. And I'll see you again next time. Until then, remember, believe bigger, be bolder, be a game changer.